You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Hey, brand builders. Before we start this week's show, just a reminder that this podcast is brought to you by the industry-leading Social Brand Forum. This premier digital marketing experience takes place on October 15th through the 16th at the historic Engler Theater in beautiful downtown Iowa City, Iowa. We bring the best marketing thought leaders like Mitch Joel, Mark Schaefer, and Amber Naslund to the heart of the heartland for a two-day event to help you take your brand's digital marketing from good to great. Podcast listeners get the best rate by using promo code ONBRAND. Learn more and register now at socialbrandforum.com. Can't wait to see you there.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Today's guest is Joe Polizzi. Joe is an entrepreneur, speaker, author, podcaster, father, and lover of all things orange. He's the founder of multiple startups, including the Content Marketing Institute, the leading content marketing educational resource for enterprise brands, recognized as the fastest-growing business media company by Inc. magazine in 2014. CMI is responsible for producing Content Marketing World, the largest content marketing event in the world, held every September in Cleveland, as well as the leading content marketing magazine, Chief Content Officer. He began using the term content marketing back in 2001. CMI also offers advisory services for innovative organizations such as HP, AT&T, Petco, LinkedIn, SAP, the Gates Foundation, and many others. Joe's last book, Epic Content Marketing, was named one of the 5 must-read business books of the year by Fortune magazine. His new book, Content Inc., will be released in September 2015, actually, right as you're listening to this podcast. Joe has spoken at more than 400 locations in 14 countries, advancing the practice of content marketing. Joe not only writes one of the most influential content marketing blogs in the world, he writes a column for Entrepreneur.com and is a LinkedIn influencer. You can also hear Joe on his podcasts, This Old Marketing and Content Inc. If you ever meet him in person, he'll be wearing orange. But today, we're lucky to have him right here on the On Brand podcast. Joe, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you, Nick. You know, it's too bad we don't have video right now because I have an orange hat with a bright orange shirt. And I'm sure your audience would absolutely love it.
So. I love that you are living the brand right here, even when even in audio only.
Even in audio form, I'm in orange. So you can always count on the fact. You know, I took out everything that wasn't orange out of the wardrobe so that I'm forced to make sure I stay on brand.
Well, this, you know, you are an inspiration to brand builders everywhere. I know you sheepishly said before we hit record, you know, I don't know, I'm much of a brand guy. And I said, I beg to differ. You are one of the best, if there is a category for color branding, I can't think of anybody that does it as effectively. You are an inspiration to those of us out there trying to do something similar with other colors. To that end, red is the brand driven color, and I'm actually sitting here wearing a red sweatshirt myself. So
see, there you go.
You're rubbing off.
I'm on your website. It's got red all over. I'm loving it. I mean, it's you cannot go wrong. You know, anything you could do to be a little bit more memorable to people is usually a good thing. And it's funny. Every week to 10 days, somebody sends me something orange in the mail. Like, I've got it all. Like, if you could see my office right now, I've got a little orange Buddha and I've got a little orange globe. I don't even know what it does. And I got a little orange octopus that just dangles there. It's just from people that just send me, say, hey, I saw this, Joe. I thought of you.
Well, it's two things. It's both fun, I mean, to have a color, but more importantly, more strategically, like you said, it's something else that's memorable. So, I mean, I think it's an easy thing that, you know, you talk about what's an easy branding tip. I mean, which it seems like a question I get asked a lot, but I don't know why more people aren't doing. I mean, most people have a color, but I think doing things with it is that kind of extra step.
To that point, and I actually told Mari that. So Mari Smith, who we know is amazing Facebook social media expert, when I saw her speak the first time, she had a turquoise dress on, and she actually decorated her stage with turquoise stuff and gave turquoise. I mean, just that was her color. And she went away from that about a year ago, maybe a little bit more than that. And I talked to her. I said, Mari, why? That was your thing. I mean, like everybody saw that color and thought of you. And I don't really know what the details are behind that. But I thought that that was an advantage that she had. She's much taller than me, too. So she can see over a large crowd is another advantage that she has. But other than that, you know, anything that you can do. And it wasn't a cognizant decision. I don't know how much we want to talk about color on this show, but as I started wearing orange, because that was our, you know, that was my brand color when I first started the company and left corporate world, I just started to be recognized by it. And then once I saw it and I went to Brussels, Belgium, of all places, and they asked me to wear a black tux. And I said, well, you're bringing me here. I mean, you're hiring me to speak. You're paying me money. I'll wear whatever you want me to wear. And I went in and did the speech, and I came off stage, and I had three people that I'd never met before in Brussels, Belgium, say, Joe, where's the orange? And I'm like, oh my goodness, I didn't know that was a thing. So it wasn't a purposeful thing. It was just something that I thought was good to represent the brand. But then once I knew that this was something that people were recognizing me because of that color, then I went all in, and now I have absolutely no clothes that don't have orange in it.
Well, it's interesting, too, because you said, I don't know how much you want to talk about color, and it popped in my head. I don't know that we ever have, so why the heck not? But it is interesting because, you know, every brand, there's, you know, very few brands that don't have a color, but it's like, it's just a unique strategy to kind of take it to the edge and kind of do that what if. You know, we challenged ourselves in that way to have it everywhere.
It's gotten really out of hand. Like when you go to content marketing world, like we have a table that's just full of orange snacks. So at every snack break, you know, you can get oranges and Cheetos and candy corn and and orange soda. And actually the Terminal Tower in downtown Cleveland, we have them lighted up orange for the week as well. So, I mean, it's getting hideous. With all the things that we're doing around orange, but man, I tell you what, it works. People really say, hey, like I'll get somebody saying, hey, the Terminal Tower is orange. Is that because of you? I said, well, no, this week is because the Cleveland Browns played. But you know what? You thought of me? So great. Thank you.
The Cleveland Browns makes me think of one of my, it wasn't, was that the logo change the color of? You applied it to the CMI logo.
Exactly. Yeah, I did a speech the morning they released it because they took the orange and they just made it a little oranger. And so I said, hey, I've got an announcement. So this is a speech that I'm doing in Rocky River, which is a suburb of Cleveland. I said, I got an announcement. We're changing the content marketing into logo. And I just made it a little bit oranger. And of course, it got a big laugh. I also have a shirt that our marketing director, Kathy McPhillips, got me that says, the orange is oranger. And only people from Cleveland would understand and get that. But it's, you know, it's a thing.
Well,
orange is the thing here.
I would say so. Well, and I think you've successfully owned the color brand strategy, because I'm also reminded, I talk about doing this sometimes with red myself, and I picked our mutual friend Ann Handley up at the airport for last year's social brand forum, and I think I was wearing our t-shirts last year were red, and I had a pair of red Asics on. And I think that was the first thing she said. She said, "Oh, you're pulling a Polizzi." I'm like, ah,
I love Ed. She's so wonderful. But yes, absolutely. Anything that we can do, right? In this world of clutter that we have, how do we get attention? And it's the little things sometimes that do it.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. You know, what are other kind of little things? And speaking of building a brand, that I love your international story too. That, you know, you never. It's not surprising when you think about the scope of everything, but those little touch points that, you know, a lot of people would say, oh, what does that matter? What does it matter what we do with colors, what people are wearing? We're an online business. You know, you can almost hear the naysayers. I mean, what are some of those other little details as you've grown your brand that you think are an important part of who you are, who CMI is?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we're a virtual company. So we have 28 people now, but we're all scattered across the United States. So the majority of people know us through our online content, specifically our daily email newsletter and blog post. And everything focuses on delivering a consistent, valuable message. So like when, you know, I say that I don't think I'm a branding expert, but I do believe that it has a lot to do with a consistent experience. And so everything that we do is sort of veiled in this idea of a consistent experience. And my belief is, and this is not my take, this is from Don Schultz. So Don Schultz, the father of integrated marketing. If you haven't read Integrated Marketing Communications, it's a great book. And it is one of the most fascinating guys on the planet. He teaches at Northwestern. And he says, anybody can copy anything else you do today. They can copy your product, your service. They can copy your technology. They can copy everything today except for how you communicate. And I've always, and he said this in 2003 is when I read it in a B2B magazine article. And I always kept that with me and I have it hanging up on the wall. And I'm like, that's it. That's how we differentiate ourselves through these consistent content experiences. That's why we really focus on process so much when it comes to our content. That's why we always know what our editorial mission statement is to our particular audience. We want to know what the audience outcome needs to be for every independent piece of content we have, and focusing on what is this experience, what's their expectations as to what Content Marketing Institute delivers on a regular basis. So it's all about that consistency. It's all about setting processes around that. So I know we were just talking about color, but we do the same thing for design. Like we have, you know, the magazine I got right in front of me. It's so funny. I've got multiple outputs of content. So I've got Chief Content Officer Magazine next to me. I've got Epic Content Marketing, the book. I got Content Inc., the book. You can tell that I want people to look right away at them and say, oh, that's Joe or that's CMI. And I really believe that we've been able to do that. And see, it's almost like the same thing when they see the orange color. They say, oh, that must be CMI. It must be Joe. It's like we can do the same thing with content, so that if somebody sees a tweet with a particular title, we're trying to get people to think that, would people feel that comes from us? Is that the type of content that we would deliver, even in a tweet? So I really, now that's hard to do, by the way, but yeah. We really do try to live that today, because that means a lot. That means everything. That's our reputation. That's how people keep opening the e-newsletter. That leads to all kinds of behavior changes if we can create that consistent content experience.
You talk about the blog too and the editorial mission statement with other people, some externally, obviously writing for the blog as well. Is there how is that consistency communicated in terms of, I mean, not just what they're saying, but also style, tone, how they're saying it?
Well, the first thing is that most people that submit to create content for the Content Marketing Institute site hate us, because our blog guidelines are horrific. I mean, horrific in a really good way. And we actually just updated them again. Like after reading it, our goal is to get people not to want to write for us. Because it's so, you know, oh, I got to do this. And it's the same thing for our speaking requirements for Content Marketing World. It's like, unfortunately, we say no to 99% of the people because you have to have these things and it's got to be really differentiated. So that's the first thing is you have to meet certain requirements. Once you meet those requirements, you say, okay, it's got to be this way. It's got to be how to. It's got to be really significant in this way. You got to focus on this. If you don't espouse to this mission, probably you probably shouldn't write for us. If you don't believe in this, you probably shouldn't write for us. So we go through all that as a litmus test before we even get them writing. Now, once they write and they understand it, that's great. We love to have them back because the hardest hurdle is the first one for both sides. So then once we get into the editorial process, you know, we've got five people touching that piece of content. And it does not include me, by the way. So we have, you know, you have the first editor, you have the managing editor, you have the proofreader, you have the person that looks at it for SEO guidelines. And we look at everything that goes through this whole consistency. And by the way, Nick, I mean, we don't have it perfected. I mean, we can improve in a lot of different areas, but we've come a long way in the last 6 years to really getting it down where when people read it, even if it's, and that's the hard part because 98% of our content is contributed content, doesn't come from us. But I think a lot of it has to do with the expectations we set up front for the contributors and then the editorial process on the back end. And everybody knows what their role is. And we have and just a side note, and I'll finish with this because I don't want to ramble on too much about it. But we have a manual. Like we're a virtual company and we have a manual that I believe is like, this is our asset. This is how we go to market and everything we do. So we've got, I think there's 17 parts of it and includes everything we do from our documentary, The Story of Content, to our webcast, to our webinars, to our blog posts, our email newsletter, everything. And it talks about here is the process that we follow. Because I really feel that creativity comes from actually giving yourself some limitations to that and then trying to stretch those wherever possible, but keeping that consistent all along the way. And everybody knows this. Everybody works really well within it and everybody knows their role. And maybe that has something to do with, you know, being able to get and keep subscribers and grow our business.
Well, you know, so many people strive for consistency and they are amazed at, you know, strong, consistent brands like yours. But it seems like so many miss the easy steps in creating consistency, that it consistency comes from guidelines, from rules, from process. It's not necessarily the stuff of, fun, creative days that you might think of, but it's through that, like you said, those constraints that inspire that creativity as well.
Process is everything, I'll tell you. I cannot, we have, like Michelle Lenz, our VP of content, and she's one of those people, God love her, that when I get information from her, like I have to save all her emails for, you know, later in the day when I have time, because I know that one's going to be at least, you know, 1500, 2000 words. Like she goes through everything because she's all about needs to work better. This needs, and she goes and gives me a detailed list. And she's the perfect person for that role because she understands how important process is. When we have a breakdown with anything that we do, if there is a mistake that happens, if something gets out, it's always process related. Somebody did not follow the process, or we found a gap in our process. And I don't feel that you can get a group of creatives into a room and just say, let's go, let's do something wacky. No, there's always something within here's the place where we're trying to make impact. We're from the 10-yard line to the 20-yard line. Here's what we have to stay in between. Now let's go crazy in between this 10 yards. Let's do that. And I think that works really well. And as long as everybody knows this, I think it makes for happier employees too. Because I think the worst thing you can do is you can set up people up to just go crazy without expectations of what success looks like. Process means that you know what success looks like and you can continually improve because you know what success is. And if you don't set the processes, how do you even know where you can improve upon? You can't.
Wow, that I am taking a moment to actually write that down because I love the idea of process means you know what success looks like. I mean, if everybody thought of it that way, we'd probably have a lot more processes in place.
Well, I think creatives, don't you think so? Like a lot of creatives think that you're trying to constrict my creativity.
Yeah.
And I always say the opposite. I said, I want you to roam free within this area. Because I can't, if you roam free over in this area, that's not going to accomplish our goals. I need you to roam free over here. Let me give you the process for doing that. And I think even the really creative people that we have on staff appreciate that. At first, they hate it.
Yeah.
But once they get into it, they're like, oh, yeah, you're right. This does make a lot of sense. And then I say, you want to be over there? Here's the process. Here's the process for that. Let's go over here. We'll go over to the other side. We'll do that for you.
Well, and I think that's also the kind of the stereotype of the creative branding types is that it is just kind of all Wild West and kind of, you know, that there aren't rules and processes too. But that's how consistent brands are built.
Absolutely.
See, I love that you were talking about all the stuff kind of in front of you, the books, the magazine, you've got the event coming up. And I think the other thing, you know, you talk about, you look at that and someone says, that's Joe. And I think the other big part of all of that is, you know, your near ownership of the concept of content. I love in your bio, you talked about using the term back in 2001. I think recently on social media, you shared something, some scrap of paper that I'd imagine you probably are going to frame and put up somewhere. It was like an outline of a talk or something where it was like, you know, you'd scribbled in content marketing or you know, one of the your first usages of the term. How did, for those that don't know, how did that progression around what is now, you know, a big force in marketing today, but how did you recognize that and move over to really owning a construct that is a huge part of your brand?
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's it was almost happened by accident. I'll tell you a little bit of the story here. So, okay, I started at Penton Media in the year 2000, and Penton Media is a large business-to-business publishing company, and I was lucky enough to be put in the custom media department, which means that we helped tell stories through custom magazines and newsletters, mostly at the time, 2000, 2001, for big business-to-business brands. So they didn't want to most of their money was spent at Penton on advertising, but they had these side projects that were custom magazines and newsletters and whatnot. In 2001, I took over the group because we had major cutbacks at Penton, and I was the cheapest one left. And so they're like, okay, Joe's cheap. He'll run the department. And they really didn't care a lot for it because they didn't see a lot of potential. No publishers did at the time in content marketing. So by the way, content marketing, very old discipline, well over 100 years old. That's why we have This Old Marketing podcast where we talk about some of these really old case studies that have happened. But it's just taken on this new renaissance here. So I'm in Penton Custom Media. I'm starting to sell. I'm in business development. And I'm going out selling to chief marketing officers and B2B companies, and I go in selling custom media, custom publishing, custom content, and they're already sleeping before I get in the room. I mean, like, oh yeah, we're gonna talk about custom publishing, and they're like, I have to wake them up. They're like, what? But so I would go in there and I would practice. I mean, I never sold before. And I just went in there and I'm just trying to get their attention. I'm just trying to get them interested in what the heck we're doing. And I'm trying to figure out if it's a fit for that company. And I started testing out in 2001 this phrase called content marketing. Just because, as I learned, marketers are very simple people. And I'm a marketer, so I can say that. And if you don't call something marketing, they probably won't pay attention to it. So just and you can practice this, right? If you say social media to a marketer and then say social media marketing, you get two very different feelings toward that word that they have. It's the same thing with, why is direct marketing successful? Why is search marketing successful? Why is it important to marketers? Because you put marketing in it. So they think it's for them. It's really, really that simple. So as I started to go in, I said content marketing, and the CMOs just kind of sat up in their seat and they're like, oh, yeah, content marketing, either we do that, which they really didn't. They say, oh, yeah, we either do that or we should do that because I'm a marketer. Let's do some content. You know, it's just very simple. This is way, you know, this is 15 years ago. So I'm like, oh, we're on to something. So anyways, we started to position that more and more. And then I had this itch to start a company, which has now become Content Marketing Institute. Launched a blog, my first blog, and you can look it up because it's still out there, April 26, 2007, Why Content Marketing. That's the name of the blog post. And I just go through why I'm sticking the flag in the ground and saying that this is content marketing. And that's really the last I brought it up. And I just, we just went out. I say we, but at the time it was just me. I just went out and said, like, that was what the industry was called. Like, I don't, you know, whether you're calling it customer media as they did in Europe or branded content as a lot of people on the consumer side call it, you know, they may have a different definition for it, but they use that term. I said, nope, it's called content marketing, folks. You've been calling it wrong all these years. It's content marketing. And then amazing things started to happen. We just started to create blog posts about that. And then, you know, like Brian Clark from Copy Blogger got behind it. He, I remember I had a conversation with him. He said, I hate that phrase, but you know what? People get it. So I'm going to start using it too. And I think he still says it today. I still think he doesn't like content marketing, but he uses it because the quicker you can get to a level of understanding with people, the better. And that's what I love what's going on in the industry right now, because a lot of people say, oh, people don't know what content marketing is, or you know, the search engine folks have taken that over and they've hijacked the term. And I say, how much quicker can we get to an understanding with people, because at least we're using the same terminology. At least I'm speaking the same language with people. And that has made such a difference to me personally just as a teacher. Because I don't have to go in and say, well, first, there's this thing called content marketing. Let me tell you what it is. People already have some idea about what it is when I go in there. So now, luckily, it's become sort of the term for what we do, creating valuable and relevant, consistent content on an ongoing basis to a targeted audience to create some profitable behavior for the company. I mean, that's the definition that we've had since 2007, and people are now taking that on, and that's the – I don't know if that's an exciting or interesting story, Nick, but that's how it sort of came all about. And now we've always been all in on the term, and hopefully it will continue. But I've always said, if there's a better term out there, I'm willing to use it. But as far, and I'm personally vested in content marketing, no doubt about it. But I believe that that's the best term. It's the most simplistic term, and it's the term that we can get very quickly into helping educate more brands on how to create better customers. And that's all we're trying to do. We just want to create better customers. We want to do better in the world. We want to create more value outside the products and services we offer. And that's really what content marketing is all about.
Well, you talk about the definition of content, and I'm reminded of the fact I teach here at the University of Iowa as well, and you are on a slide defining content with that definition of a.
Am I wearing orange in the slide?
I think I'm looking at you via Skype right now, and I well, your headshot rather, and so you're consistent in all of your headshots. You are on the slide too. It is irony of ironies. It's in my deck, so it's a red slide. So we've got some orange on red happening.
There you go. That's fantastic.
Probably ill advised by fashionistas there with the orange.
But you know what's interesting about that term, though? It really didn't pick up traction until end of 2009-2010, really after the Great Recession. So if you think about when people are trying to think about how long it takes to do something like that, I mean, that's 3 years of consistent content generation, building a loyal audience over time before people really started to use that term. So it just, you know, we were sort of out there. I mean, I was wondering, I don't know. I mean, there was a time in 2009 where I thought I had to go work for somebody else because the financial model wasn't working. And luckily, you know, we kept with it and I kept patience and finally it broke through. But you know, I was worried for a while, but it can happen. It does happen. But patience is the hardest thing for marketers most time. And the patience is what you really need most when it comes to content marketing working.
Well, especially when you're building a business around an emerging idea too. I mean, that's not something that, oh, this is happening now. I mean, that's rare that anything, especially when it depends on people's understanding and awareness of, you know, you talked about it not being anything new. Is there what's the oldest example? Do you just in cocktail conversation have one that you, is that one of the oldest ones that you can?
Well, you know, Doug Kessler from Velocity Partners out of London, he always says that the first example was when the cavemen wanted to sell something and they were drawing pictures of the cave walls. And that was the first, they were telling stories about how they were attacked and you had to buy the spear because the spear helped attack whatever. I'm like, Doug, I can't sell that. Actually, Poor Richard's Almanac is probably the earliest one from Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin used the educational tool of Poor Richard's Almanac to actually sell more into his printing press. So a lot of people don't realize that. So that was in the 1700s, late 1700s. There's a lot in the mid 1800s. And then when you get to the late 1800s, you start to see a flurry of activity, as it would be for old content marketing examples. I use John Deere's The Furrow magazine as sort of the quintessential example. 1895, it was created, The Furrow magazine, a magazine to farmers, small businesses, how they could help their small business grow or help use the current technology of the day. And now it's still 100 years plus strong. I always love this part. It's like I say, well, what's the largest media company in the agricultural industry? And people say, well, I don't know. I said, well, it's not a media company. It's John Deere, 1.5 million subscribers, 40 countries, 14 different languages. So that's been going on for a long time. Sherwin-Williams launched a magazine in 1910 called the Home Decorator Magazine. They renamed it Stir Magazine, still going strong today. That's now mostly a digital component. But a lot of those, and then you get into the Procter & Gamble examples of the soap opera, which are great examples going into the, you know, on radio in the 30s and 40s, and then into the 50s and on television. And so I just love I'm a history buff, as you could tell, and I'm consistently out there looking for more examples of how we believe that the original way that companies were marketing was actually not advertising. It was actually through telling stories that provided some kind of value that helped people to know, like, and trust you more, and then you ended up selling to them. So that's where, you know, I can't prove that yet, but we are certainly trying to prove it, that it was one of the early ones. But I think an example from the 1700s is pretty darn good at this point.
I'd say so. You talk about the kind of the digital revolution or renaissance on, obviously helped with people's awareness. But I also think it's amazing that you, in terms of your own content that CMI is creating, you know, you talked about all those magazine examples that you are, you know, have a magazine out there. You know, that's not, you know, an online company creating a physical magazine is almost unheard of, I would think, today.
Well, it's interesting. I feel that's our competitive advantage, and it's in print. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
We launched it in January of 2011. We launched it. And so, again, I got to go back to my publishing roots. And this is lots of ongoing training and publishing. And we've believed in the three legs of the stool. The three legs of the stool were in-person events, a leading print publication, and a leading digital presence. And that's where, actually, when I came out with the mission statement for Content Marketing Institute, this is in fall of 2009, I said, we will launch the leading digital resource for content marketing. We will launch the leading magazine and have the leading in-person event. Well, luckily, all three of those things have happened, but it started out with that goal. I think look what's happening, too. Look at Airbnb. Airbnb just launched a print magazine called Pineapple. So, I mean, Uber just launched a magazine called Momentum. I think that we forget that there's power in that form. And what I've seen a lot of companies do is they've discarded it because, oh, no, we're an innovative company. We're all in on digital. Well, that's fine. That could be your primary source. But do you understand how consumers behave? Do you know how many people still engage in print? Do you know the average person that engages in our magazine is in it for 25 to 40 minutes? I mean, tell me some online initiative that you're doing that every other month you get 30 minutes of somebody's time. It doesn't happen, but it can happen in print, and it's still happening today. Now, do I think print's going to take over digital? No, I do not think that, but I think it can be a strong component, and I think that it's always been a strong component, and I cannot see that changing anytime soon, especially with talking to more and more really innovative companies. We have the pleasure of working with some of the most innovative companies in the world, and they're finally starting to talk print. And I think that's where you look at the whole integrated brand strategy, and you're talking about who's the audience I'm trying to target and what I want that audience to do. And in a lot of cases, print makes sense, and I just don't want people to discard that.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned the kind of belief that I, you know, you hear of, no, we're innovative, so we're digital. as opposed to some of these real innovations in terms of what's next when you've got your digital bases covered. I mean, and certainly it's something you're doing and others, but in terms of really standing out of using something that, you know, I think people, you know, like easy absolutes, like the black and white of no print, as opposed to, no, print still makes sense. It's just not something that we're getting for kind of that mass reach that it used to have. It's this very
highly focused, targeted.
Yeah.
Highly targeted and focused. I mean, there's one company that Robert Rose, who runs our consulting group at Content Marketing Institute, he went into, and they do, it's a financial company, and they do a book club. I mean, this is not even print that they send, that they create themselves. They pick out leadership books, and every month to their best customers, they send a print book with a little overview from the executive saying why this book was important, what they're going to get out of it, why they should engage in this print book. And what they realized is when they did the survey about those customers re-upping for the next year, they asked them, what was the biggest reason why you re-up? Number one on the list? The book club.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's not the product or service that they offer. It's the communication. And that's what I love. That's how we can differentiate ourselves. This is ongoing content experience. And sometimes that makes sense in print. And that's why, like Chief Content Officer, our print magazine goes to senior executives. And I'll tell you, this hit me. This is all qualitative. Now I've got quantitative information on the magazine, but in the past, I just wanted to do it. I thought it was the right thing to do. And this is about 6 months after we launched issue 2 of Chief Content Officer, and I was at a senior executive event, CMOs only. Two of the 50 CMOs had the magazine with them. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you're kidding me. They're actually... like I didn't even know they knew who we were or how we got them on the list, but they actually had the magazine. I'm like, oh my God, we're never stopping this. And I sent that, someone sent to the editor of the magazine and everybody. I'm like, are you never going to believe it? I just ran into two CMOs that had our magazine. And that was exactly the purpose, because we wanted CMOs to get the magazine and then talk to their marketing people under them and say, what are we doing in content marketing? That was the whole behavior of Chief Content Officer magazine. Still is, by the way. And we saw that happen, and now we know other things that are helping more define that. But it's just that kind of thing that can happen, and it's one little behavior we were looking for and we were able to get.
Wow. So if we started kind of exploring branding, we segued to content. Come full circle, what role does content play in positioning a brand?
My take is... and I learned this really well from Marcus Sheridan. So Marcus Sheridan, CEO of River Pools and Spas, and I watched an interview. He was interviewed for the documentary, and he was talking about this, and I think it's so true. He said the pivotal point in his career as an owner and a marketer was when he realized that he just didn't sell and install fiberglass pools. He said, first and foremost, I teach people about how they can get more out of their fiberglass pools and learning. And he said, the first thing is I'm a teacher and I add value every day about what we teach. And he says, everybody in this company is a teacher. And secondarily, we just happen to sell and install fiberglass pools. I think that's everything today. I think that's everything we want to be in a brand is not what we sell. It's what we stand for. And I think that's figuring out, well, what do we stand for? What is that? What's the audience that we're trying to influence their lives, change their lives, help them get better jobs, better lives in some way? What is that audience? And then what are we going to deliver to them to help them get that experience that lies outside the product or service that we sell? That's a paradigm. It's a very simple concept, by the way, but it's paradigm shifting if you've been focusing on here's what we sell, and so that everything revolves, all our communication revolves around what we sell. It's actually flipping it and saying, who's our audience and how can we make a difference to that audience? And oh, by the way, we're going to monetize that audience this way. It's like secondary. That's where I think it's where it's at, Nick. I think that's it, and it's all about then building audiences. And even the larger companies in the world are looking at building audiences in particular niches and then monetizing those audiences in different ways. Sometimes it's a product or service that they have, and sometimes, like in Red Bull's case, I don't think Red Bull ever thought that they were going to be in the media business, that they were going to actually syndicate their content and video to traditional publishers and sell it. I didn't think that they were going to actually underwrite musical acts and that was going to be part of Red Bull Media House. I don't ever think they thought about the revenue opportunities there, but it has grown into almost as big of an opportunity as selling Red Bull beverages. But that's the revenue ripples. Doug Kessler, again, calls it revenue ripples, where when you grow an audience, you see all these revenue opportunities that you never knew existed. I think that's where there's the opportunity, especially for small companies listening to this. I think it's a huge opportunity. But for big companies, you know, it's not about reaching a targeted mass media audience anymore. It's that we probably have 30 to 40 to 50 different audiences that we're talking to. Every one of them will have a platform, and every one of them has different meaning to that individual audience. So that's I don't even know if I answered your question, Nick, but
absolutely. Well, the Red Bull example, too, like you said, I don't know that they'd expected to be in the media business, but they followed the steps as opposed to what do I have to sell of answering what you stand for, who your audience is. And I mean, as you were saying, I don't know that that would be necessarily a linear strategy for Red Bull, but they knew their audience. They knew who they were talking to as opposed to, you know, how can we sell more drinks? They knew in a very unique way who their audience was, what they stood for, and how they could connect those dots.
Well, it's interesting now we're seeing this go mainstream, right? So Marriott and David Beebe, who runs the Marriott content program, is speaking at Content Marketing World. He says, you know, we put a flag in the ground and we said, we are going to be the leading informational resource in the travel and tourism industry. We're going to be the leading media company. This is Marriott. Mm-hmm. Marriott monetizes by, you know, renting rooms out. That's how they do it. But they say, no, the key to our future is not real estate. It's not booking more rooms. It's by creating impact on people's lives who are interested in travel and tourism. I'm like, wow. They're doing these short films and blogs and all kinds of stuff. They've got, I think, 90 people in their content studio now, from 0 to 90 in like less than a year, which is amazing that they've got executive support around this. That's where I think we're going to see more and more of these brands going, because you and I are not going to be able to tell the difference between a media company and a non-media company. It's all going to be media, and everyone's going to be selling products and services. It's just someday we'll just forget to think about the difference, because it's not going to be there anymore.
I forgot about, you mentioned earlier with Marcus Sheridan and the documentary and other things to talk about, but you talk about Marriott being the travel resource, and it makes me think of another mutual friend and past guest here, Drew Davis, talking about building a content brand. And here's what I wonder, with brands jumping in and like Marriott, we want to be the travel resource. Is Marriott, or I'm just using them as an example, Is someone able to do that and still be Marriott, or do they need to create a content brand that, you know, is someone going to be concerned of, oh, you're just going to be, you know, selling me rooms, or, oh, I see what you're doing behind that? Is there a need for another brand in that circumstance?
In most cases, I would say yes. In most cases, if you look at, and okay, this is going back to my publishing days. So Penton Media didn't have any publications called Penton Media. Right. And the thing that infuriates me, well, it doesn't infuriate me. It just doesn't work. When you go to somebody's site and like some big company's site, and it's just their content brand is called blog.
Yeah.
And I mean, really? Who's going to go to blog? That's a really compelling. I'm going to go to the blog, because that really gives me what I need every day. So I think that absolutely in almost all cases, and look at a company like Procter & Gamble, right? Procter & Gamble has HomemadeSimple.com, Homemade Simple brand. They have BeanGirl.com brand, and that's specific to teenagers. Homemade Simple is specific to moms on the go. So they've got different brands depending on who the audience is. And so back to Penton. So, you know, Penton has 120 different sub-brands, which Andrew would call content brands. And they monetize those. Everyone monetizes those content brands differently. Some sell products and services. Some sell advertising. Some sell events. So I think that's the way we kind of look at it and how we monetize that, depending on who the audience is. It's just hard to get people excited about. And remember, it's about the audience and it's not about what you sell. So it's hard to get somebody excited about P&G blog versus Homemade Simple.
Yeah.
or I mean, American Express Open Forum has sort of they've sort of done the co-branding thing, but really the brand is Open Forum.
Yeah,
it's not American Express. So, yeah, I absolutely think you probably should look at some kind of sub brand to do that initiative instead of just saying, oh, hey, we're so and so company. You should just come check us out because we're Apple or we're Cisco. In most cases, that they're not going to do that. Maybe in Apple's case, they do because Apple can do no wrong for some reason. But in every other case, I think you need a content brand.
Well, you talked about getting away from the stuff that you have to sell, and I want to be cognizant of because again, I was reminded in the course of the interview about the documentary, about Content Marketing World, about your new book. What all? As this episode is posting, you're in the middle of about 500 different things as people are listening to you talk casually on this podcast. So what all is happening for you here over the course of the next now for folks listening?
Yeah, I don't know if I can go through all of it. Obviously, Content Marketing World, our big show, over 3,000 marketers from 50 countries coming into Cleveland. That's September 8th through 11th. Probably too late by this point, but the things within that are really interesting. So for those marketers, if you're a marketer within a big company trying to get buy-in, we have the documentary coming out, The Story of Content. You can go to thestoryofcontent.com. It's 45 minutes. I can't wait for this, Nick. I can't wait till you see it. I want to get your feedback. This is a labor of love that we really go through the history. And we talk to P&G and talk to Marriott and talk to Red Bull. And we've got sort of why they made this executive decision to look at content marketing as an asset for the organization. So I absolutely love that. John Deere's in it as well. So we've got that. That's the story of content. The new book is Content Inc. And what's interesting about Content Inc. is Epic Content Marketing that targeted enterprise marketers. Content Inc. is really for small businesses, startups, entrepreneurs, and change agents. And what we found out with Content Inc. was that you can actually be dozens and dozens and dozens of really successful multimillion-dollar businesses that created an audience first and then monetize that after they build an audience. And we reverse engineered all the interviews into these six steps that I think any company of any size can do. And I'm probably more passionate, Nick, about this book launch than not that the other books weren't great. I mean,
you love all of your children equally.
They're all my children. I love them equally. But this one is my passion because this was what we did at Content Marketing Institute. And then I said, hey, we're not alone. Here's all these other companies and all these other industries all over the world doing the same thing. And it's a simple six-step process that does take some time, but absolutely any company with any amount of resources can do. So that's what I'm working on. Really, the documentary launches on the 8th at the same time. That's the same time the book launches on the 8th. And I'll be touring for the next 6 months talking about Content Inc. or content marketing or whatever else people want me to talk about, just trying to evangelize the art and practice of content marketing.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in the show notes, the documentary. I'm excited for that too. And you say 45 minutes, and I'm thinking that might fit into a college level course too. So that would be,
I like that.
That would be, that would much rather show instead of tell. So, we always ask for a brand that's made you smile. You mentioned so many. Did you, that I could tell you're smiling about as talking through other ones, or maybe something from the book or something that who's made you smile recently?
Oh, man, there is so many. I mean, of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Lego, who I actually thought was going to be the first Oscar winner brand film, which I was hoping they would because that would have been a great example. But their storytelling is beyond belief. My kids love Lego, by the way, as well. So I'm into it. I've got a Moleskine sitting right next to me that's a Lego branded Moleskine. I'm all into that. And then what else? I'm really into and he's on the cover of our magazine and I name a big company. I'll name a small company, Game Theory. So Matthew Patrick is on the cover of our latest Chief Content Officer. He's presenting at Content Marketing World. I love it because he was trying to put something on the resume. He was an actor. He didn't want to go into acting. He didn't have any experience. He said, well, maybe if I do some of these YouTube videos and, you know, I can get really good experience and a business will hire me. He created from that the game theory platform. It's a 10 to 15 minute video every week, and he went from nothing to 5 million subscribers on YouTube, built a multi-million dollar business, and he actually consults for YouTube. YouTube consults with him on how YouTube can get more audience driven to their particular YouTubers, which is just amazing. So I just hat tip to Matthew Patrick. You can check it out. It's Game Theorists, I think, on YouTube. Game Theory. My kids watch. That's how I found out about it. My kids are watching it. I'm like, what is this guy? And it's been an amazing, he's a great guy, amazing case study. And it's just a testament that anybody with focus and a strategy can really do this thing and build a business off the back of a content first approach.
Awesome. Speaking of documentaries and Legos, did you see the Lego Brickumentary?
I have not seen it yet. It's on my list. I've been just a little busy.
Sure, but yeah, a couple things. I don't know why you can't go to the movie.
I have to make time for it. The Brickumentary, yeah, it's absolutely on my list. I'll probably get to it after September 11th. I'm going to have a couple drinks right after September 11th and the show's done, and then I'll get back to work. But I definitely want to see that.
No, it was really good. I actually took my my two older boys, and I was amazed because, you know, it covers some of the business side of Lego stuff, but it's actually a great documentary. I mean, really well made, but they really integrated, told the story in an interesting way. It helps when it is an interesting story, but
looking forward to it. Fantastic.
So where can folks go? I think I know the answer, but I'll let you say it to learn more about all things Joe.
Well, the new book is content-inc.com. You can get a free chapter and a free ebook talking about all the great case studies. Contentmarketinginstitute.com is the business site, and I'm at Joe Pulizzi on Twitter. And if you send a note to me that's personalized on Twitter, just give me about 24 hours, and I usually try to get back and at least say something, hopefully something interesting. But at Joe Pulizzi is the address on Twitter.
Great. Well, we'll link up to all of that as discussed. Well, enjoy the next few weeks that you have ahead of you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate all the support, and keep going with that red.
I will.
You need more and more red.
I will try. I will try. But the orange casts an enormous shadow. So awesome.
Love it, my friend.
Well, before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our listeners, give a shout to our friend of the show, Mark Hershon, who is traveling in the Far East right now. Hey, Mark, safe travels, and thanks for listening. And a reminder, if you like something on this episode or another, or have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may hear your thoughts on the show. Last but not least, as we said, we'll link up to everything over at BrandDrivenDigital.com, the red site. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over, give us a quick rating review, help others find the show. And don't forget that this podcast is brought to you by the industry-leading Social Brand Forum. You can save $100 by registering using promo code ONBRAND. You can learn more and register now at socialbrandforum.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.